Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Judith Lafitte of Octavia Books and Elizabeth Barry Alquist of Blue Cypress Books about their summer reading recommendations and what fun there is to be found in local bookstores. It's summertime and the reading is easy, so we thought we'd ask some of our local booksellers for their best recommendations for summer reading. This week, we're talking to Judith Lafitte of Octavia Books about children's books, picture books, and books for young readers. Judith, welcome to The Reading Life.
Oh, thank you, Susan. This is quite a pleasure.
So what have you got in your book bag, lady?
I have four lovely little books that are interesting, fascinating, and probably enough to make you want to think about things. Basically, I have two very young chapter books that I have chosen, mm-hmm. and the other two are definitely picture books. So the first book I've chosen that's on my list is Little Shrew by Akiko Miyakoshi. It's a little chapter book for ages 5 to 8, and it's about a little character whose name is Little Shrew, of course.
Mm-hmm.
He's very hardworking. He has a very strict schedule that he keeps to. But as he's walking home from work one day, he buys a garage sale, and he sees a most fascinating object that he's not aware of that he's ever seen before. He's so excited about it that he trades his scarf with this object. And when he gets home, he immediately calls his friends to invite them over to share the experience of this new object. But you have to read the book to find out what the object is.
Ah! The thrill of discovery.
Yes.
Not to mention seeing what a shrew finally looks like.
Exactly. Exactly.
So what is it about this book that appealed to you the most?
The illustrations, I think the storyline is very cute and different. There are pages that indicate he's a very hard worker. He does have friends, but during the week he spends most of his time on a schedule of eating, sleeping, and working. It's really great because kids are very scheduled. And when something out of the ordinary happens, I think it's fun to sort of stop and look at that, whatever it is, to discover mm-hmm. what it is that's fascinating you. And then share it, of course. That's why I've chosen this little book.
Does it have a kind of Japanese look to it?
Not really. It's not anime or anything like that. It's just illustrations are really sweet and adorable. They're just very cute.
All right.
The next one I have is Kate DeCamillo's new little chapter book called Oris and Timble, The Beginning, about a mouse and an owl. And if anybody knows anything about mice and owls, they're natural born enemies. So, you know, owls eat mice. So one day, Oris, the mouse, is walking along and he sees this owl who is caught in a trap. So his dilemma is he knows that if he frees the owl that he might get eaten. So should he take a chance to free the owl and see what happens? So that's where this little book goes, is if he does a good deed, will the good deed be recognized? Mm-hmm. Or will he have to suffer the consequences of, you know?
Yeah, no good deed goes unpunished.
Right.
Oh, and what's next?
So the next book I chose is The Spaceman by Randy Cecil. This is really unusual and different, and just really sweet. So a really tiny spaceman arrives on a planet, you know, and he's here to perform, or he's there to perform his job, which is collecting samples of, you know, whatever, the dirt or the plants or whatever. So he's, I guess he's kind of a scientist in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And while he's doing that, while he's performing his little tasks, a bird comes down and grabs his spaceship. So now he has to try to find his spaceship in order to get back home. So there's lots of humor and surprises along the way. It's just a really fun, sweet little story about being in a place that maybe you've never been before, and how do you get out of the situation?
I love it that you have three books about little things. You know what I mean? There's something.
Yes. So, this is really fun. It's bright. The illustrations are adorable. He's very, very tiny. So all the plant life and everything is very large around him. And it's just very, it's a very sweet little story. So.
Well, it makes me want to see his little spaceship.
I know, it's just so cute.
But last but not least, you have one that is not about little things, exactly.
That's right. Well, sort of, kind of,
yeah.
I guess. Millie Fleur's Poison Garden by Christy Mandan is definitely, I mean, these are all my favorites, but this is really, really sweet and cute. Millie moves to a town where, and a neighborhood where everything is the same. All the flower gardens in the yards are the same. The houses are the same. Everything is the same. However, the house that she moves into is sort of run down, and the yard has never been taken care of. So it's, I guess it's been sitting there for a while, and the neighbors were getting concerned about it. So she and her family move in, and she decides to create her garden. However, it's a very peculiar garden, and she plants very wondrous and marvelous and poisonous plants that give people kind of a shock to know, you know, whether she is not a good person, but, you know, they're concerned that, you know, she has some evil aspect, but she really doesn't. She just likes gardening, and she loves unusual flowers. One day, some of the kids in the neighborhood are walking by, and she invites them in to see her garden. And she, of course, she has snapdragons, and she has Venus flytraps, and any number of very unusual flowers or plants. And, you know, they come to appreciate her eventually with her and her family and the gardening that they like to do. So it's very sweet, and it's a sort of a discovery book where just because a person is different than you doesn't mean that they are evil or bad. So this is a really cute little book about, you know, discovery about yourself and others and how basically you can get along with anybody if you try.
So. Now, refresh my memory. As I recall, when I looked at it, it had dark, rich colors.
Yes, it does. I just love it. It reminds me a lot of in my earlier conversation with you about the Addams Family and Wednesday, who was that little character, the little young girl in that story on TV. It's richly colored. The expressions on people's faces are, you know, you could see that they're like disgusted or appalled or, you know. It's just very, very sweet. And, you know, finally, when the kids do get to see her garden and know what the plants are inside of it, they're really very curious, which is great. And so she does end up making friends and being part of the community. So, but it's really sweet. And the colors and the illustrations are just, you know, they're very fun to look at.
So. Well, the Wendy aesthetic is strong.
I mean, it's very strong.
So tell me, what do you do when people visit the store and they want advice in picking out children's books, especially for summer, which is a special time for kids to read? So what do you tell them?
Well, there's a process that I go through. First of all, if the child is there, I can usually tell what
sure.
age they are. But if the child is not there, then I, sort of have to ask the parent or the guardian who is buying the book the age of the child and whether they have a special preference for what they like to read, if they know about that. And then I just go through my list of books in my head and figure out what I think they might like. And then I just start pulling books and handing them to either the child or the adult who is here, just if it piques their interest or not. But that's basically, it's pretty simple in terms of, pulling books off a shelf to be able to do that.
I remember when my kids were little and looking for summer reading, they latched on to series. And sometimes that would keep them going through an entire 3 months.
kids love to read series, especially like the middle graders. They really like reading books in a series. As you get older or as they get older, it tends to wane a little.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, when those teenagers turn into adults, then it's just, sort of a choice of whether they want to read a series or if they want to read an individual book. It doesn't really, I don't think there's a mandate or dictate for whatever area that they go in. So
I remember when Dash was little, he read the entire Magic Treehouse series one summer. I couldn't walk through the house without stepping on one of those books.
Well, Magic Treehouse is now in graphic now. So kids are gravitating towards Magic Treehouse with graphic. So, but that is actually the biggest series that gets read in the store are, I'm surprised that people are still reading Harry Potter. And then all the graphic books in series are, very, very popular in the store. So.
Well, remember when summer meant a new Harry Potter?
Yes, of course.
Those were the days.
I think about that often.
I know. We were so lucky.
Yes, we were. Totally. And all the times that we played games outside of the store and we created the the environment for all the shops and whatnot, using shops that were on Magazine Street. That was really a lot of fun. I'm hoping one day that another book will come along like that. That will be
even wouldn't that
more.
Be great?
Yes, it would be.
You're a wizard, so. Judith.
I know.
Well, we've been talking with Judith Lafitte of Octavia Books about her summer reading recommendations for young readers. Judith, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan, for having me. This was a pleasure.
As we head into the last weeks of summer, we thought we'd turn to some of our local booksellers for their reading recommendations. This week, we're talking to Elizabeth Barry Alquist at Blue Cypress Books. Hi, Elizabeth. How are you?
So good, Susan. How are you doing today?
All right. Has it been a good summer at the shop?
It has. We've got books and air conditioning. We're set.
So what have been your favorite books this summer? What should we be looking at to decide what to read?
Oh, my gosh. It's again, thank you so much for asking. However, it is always so hard to pick favorites. So I would say the talk of the bookstore, especially these last couple of weeks, has been the New York Times bestseller list. They came out with their 100 best books of the century, in the middle of the century. But our customers just can't stop talking about them.
You think many customers will work their way through the entire list?
Some have said they would. Mostly, it has been a very positive reaction. I think that often lists such as these can be very divisive. But people have really been talking about it, what was on there, what was not on there, how they felt about the combination of fiction and nonfiction, how many, we had a few local authors. I believe Jamie Attenberg, her list made the New York Times, not only the books, but the authors that chose the books and how we felt about the list existing, everything. It's been all over the place, and really, quite a few fantastic conversations that all of the booksellers have had with not only each other, but our customers. We've really enjoyed it.
Well, anything that gets people talking about books is worthwhile.
And like I said, it was mostly positive. So that was my inspiration for talking to you today. I picked a few books that I think have led the conversational charge. So the first one that I grabbed was probably, I wanted to give it a little balance between fiction and nonfiction. Mm-hmm. So the first fiction I picked actually did not make it to the list. And it was the one most brought up by my customers and actually didn't make it to the best of the readers list, and that is Madeline Miller's Circe.
Wow, interesting.
Circe did not make the list, and I would say that many customers were surprised, not only because just emotionally they felt like it was one of their favorite books, but as a bookseller, I have seen this publishing leap to publish books about reissuing of mythology, especially from women's mythology, and I probably have 20 or 30 books on the shelf right now that, I mean, frankly, want to be Madeline Miller's Circe or want to be Song of Achilles. And since Circe especially didn't make the list, I think that's the one that most people are like, wow, I can't believe we didn't see that there.
Mm-hmm. That was such a trendsetter. You're right.
It is a trendsetter. And it's still, to this day, even though it came out in 2019, it's still one of my best-selling books. And I've got UK editions. We've got fancy hardbacks. We've got paperbacks. We move them all day long. People are still loving this as an intro to mythology in general and just really enjoying this women-centered mythology. So I wanted to highlight that for the summer.
And don't you love it when people want special editions of a book like that?
Oh, we do. Aren't we just collectors, a sucker for a special edition?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. What's next?
So the other one that did make the list, another piece of fiction that has been going really well for us and just came out in paperback, is Gabrielle Zavon's Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, or as we just call it, Tomorrow Times Three.
So why do you think people love that book so much?
Honestly, not that it's still, it's complicated. It's got three individual people. I think it boils down to friendship. At the end of the day, there is this story of people coming out of college and they have all of these really wonderful things going on. There's video game developing, which I would not have thought was going to be something that I would be so interested in, so compelled by. But the story of these three people as they make their way through adulthood and especially friendship, I think is just so compelling that everyone can find themselves in this. This is probably our second best-selling piece of fiction. And now that it's come out in paperback, it's just flying off the shelves. And that did make the 100 best books, New York Times best books. And I can see why.
So what are your nonfiction choices?
Okay, so did not make the best-selling list, but I really felt like this encompassed so many just lists in general, reading, and the state of books today in this world. And I cannot stop thinking about Salman Rushdie's memoir, Knife.
Ah, yeah.
Subtitled Meditations After an Attempted Murder. Mm-hmm. This is someone who, I still to this day, I am so deeply moved by his passion and advocacy for freedom of speech, of reading, of books, of the literary world in general. After 25 years, he was stalked and somebody tried to kill him for books. And the fact that he could come up with a memoir and still be so coherent and so focused, I am so deeply impressed. And I mean, what a page turner, right?
Oh, of course. And such language. Oh, my God.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. So moving. And I'm so haunted by it. So it didn't make it. But I think that I think that when the list comes out again in 25 years, I firmly believe this one's going to make it on that list.
All right. Let's hope we're here to check it. I mean,
I will live for see this list. I promise.
Right. I'm sure.
Just out of spite. So the last one that I have, nonfiction, is an homage to the book that was number one, Elena Ferrante's Neapolitan Quartet, My Brilliant Friend, made the number one of the list. And I am a full-fledged member of the Elena Ferrante cult. It's a good cult.
It's a big cult.
It's a friendly cult. Yeah, nothing bad's going to happen to you in this cult, okay? It's a good cult. Come on over. Come join us in the cult. But the nonfiction, one of the things, if you've read Elena Ferrante's Quartet, you'll find that she talks so much about the writing life, about the writing process, about what it means to be a woman who's writing. And a lot of her work is actually nonfiction. So I picked Incidental Inventions, mm-hmm. which is her nonfiction work of her monthly essays that she did for the Guardian newspaper. And it's really one of my favorite collections of essays. They're timeless. You think that you're going to plow through, but her strength of writing and the physicality of the book, it has beautiful, I know we're on radio, but it has beautiful, lavish illustrations. The paper is really heavy cardstock. It's just a pleasure to read. And I thought for people who have read Elena Ferrante's fiction work and want to delve into her nonfiction, this is the perfect book for that, Incidental Inventions.
Well, it'll have to hold us over till the next book.
Oh, from your mouth to her pen.
So a lot of book clubs take summers off, but yeah. not necessarily book clubs in bookstores. And you have two in particular that are very interesting. And one of them is the Happily Ever After Book Club.
Yes, it has been so good. So the Happily Ever After Book Club has been going on for about a year and a half here. We do not take a break. Apparently, romance does not rest. So we are still going, as a matter of fact. Every other Tuesday. This month is going to be Midnight Debut is the book that we're featuring this month. And we're just, it's lively, great conversations, breaking up into different groups and activities. And everyone's just having a really great time. And it's a perfect way to spend a summer evening.
So who vets all the happy endings?
Well, that's going to be the assistant manager here, Jody. Jody goes through, she picks the books for the entire year through a really thoughtful process of making sure that there's an enormous amount of representation and something for everyone in every book club. And just the joy of the book club alone seems to bring out, even if the book isn't exactly something that people maybe think they want to read, just coming for the camaraderie and the community of the book club is pretty amazing.
And you never know when you'll be surprised at a book club. Never, never.
You never know. And people should really trust Jody. She's got her pulse on what people are wanting to read in the romance genre. She's nailed it.
So the other book club that intrigues me no end is the Silent Book Club.
Yeah, this is really wonderful. So this is a community-led book club that we have just been really honored to host every other month. They are really special in that it is made for introverts. This group comes in, they go upstairs, and for 1 hour, they just read what they want to read without discussing it anyway. They bring pillows and snacks or their own chair, or they find a place in a corner and they just cozy up. And for 1 hour, they just read.
Somebody brings his own chair?
One person has definitely brought their own chair. Listen, and I respect that.
I would respect that too. Oh, Elizabeth.
It's just so great because look, how many times have we bought the book without buying the time to read it?
True.
This is just giving yourself that hour without any explanation, without anybody having, there's just no expectations. You just have this wonderful, brilliant 1 hour to read whatever you want to read.
Well, do any regular customers just kind of blunder in and start to talk?
No, I have pretty strict rules. So, you know, we have a two-story shop now, and literally, you put your foot on that stair, silence. You can chatter all you want downstairs, but when you hit that staircase, You're in the club.
And you're strict. You're very strict.
Very strict. You know me. I'm being so strict.
Well, thank you so much. We've been talking with Elizabeth Barry Alquist of Blue Cypress Books, who reminds us of all the fun to be had in bookstores over the summer. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Susan.
We mourn the loss of Keith Weldon Medley, author of Black Life in Old New Orleans and We as Freemen, Plessy v. Ferguson, a lovely man, committed culture bearer, generous scholar, and one of the kindest people you will ever meet. Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Amanda Bellos appears in conversation with Ryan Fertel to discuss The Explorers, a new history of America in 10 expeditions. That's Friday, August 2nd at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Karen McManus appears in conversation with Jumata Emil and signs Such Charming Liars, Tuesday, August 6th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. This is a ticketed event. And don't forget, during these dog days of summer, most of our public libraries are doing double duty as cooling centers. Get yourself a free library card, pick up some books, and cool off at the same time. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, with major support from Rouse's Markets. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.